All right, so get ready, because today we are taking a deep dive into a question that is pretty intense.
Oh, yeah.
Is American democracy dying?
Phew.
We're looking at a 2025 article called Beyond Partisanship: How Manipulative Electoral Tactics Demand Radical Reform by Raja.
Okay.
It was published in the Geopolitical Compass, and basically Raja seems to think that democracy is on life support.
Wow,
So
okay.
we're going to like go through their argument and look at the history of like election manipulation and how it got this way.
Right.
And we'll also look at how other countries do things differently and some ways we could maybe make things better.
Interesting.
And I think the big question that we're going to be grappling with is like, what is our responsibility in all of this? Like, how do we rebuild a democracy that actually works
Right,
for
yeah.
all of us, you know?
Absolutely.
So one of the things that really stood out to me when I was reading this piece is
Yeah.
Raja doesn't just blame, one party or the other.
Right.
They point out that both Republicans and Democrats have used these tactics to, get ahead.
I mean, it's not really a surprise.
Right. It's not black and white, like good guys versus bad guys.
Totally.
They use the 2024 North Carolina election as kind of an example.
Okay.
And the Republican-led legislature there really went all out with like gerrymandering, voter suppression, even messing with the courts to stay in power.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good example, but it's not like it's the only place where this is happening.
Exactly.
It's a problem everywhere.
So what you're saying is it's not just a North Carolina thing.
Right, it's a systemic issue, a weakness in our democracy that either party can exploit.
Which makes me think about that idea of accountability sabotage
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
that comes from Glacius.
Right.
They argue that authoritarianism isn't just about dictators. It can happen in democracies too, through these kind of practices that break down transparency and trust.
Makes sense.
So, like, think about it. Gerrymandering creates these districts where politicians basically can't lose.
Yeah, no matter what they do.
Voter suppression makes it hard for certain groups to even vote.
Silencing their voices,
And
basically.
then when you add in a court system that doesn't, hold anyone accountable,
It's a recipe for disaster.
yeah, it really undermines the whole point of a democracy.
Totally.
And what's really scary is this isn't something new.
Right.
Raja goes way back, to the 19th century
Wow.
to talk about the history of how we got here.
Like, how far back are we talking?
They start with these old school political machines,
Oh, yeah.
like Martin Van Buren's Albany Regency in New York. It
Interesting.
wasn't just about winning elections for them.
Right.
It was about building this whole network of favors and loyalty so they could control everything.
Wow.
They used all these shady tactics like backroom deals and threats, even outright fraud, just to stay in power.
So they were not exactly following the rules of democracy.
No, not at all.
And I'm guessing these tactics didn't just disappear.
You guessed it, they just adapted and got more sophisticated over time.
Okay, so where do they go next?
Well, Raja draws a line from those early political machines to the South after the Civil War.
The Reconstruction era.
Yet, slavery was abolished, but the Southern elites still wanted to hold on to their power.
So how do they do that?
They came up with all these ways to stop Black people from voting.
Like what?
Things like poll taxes and literacy tests.
Wow.
They even resorted to violence.
That's a dark part of our history.
It is, and it still has an impact today.
So gerrymandering was a part of this too, right?
Big time. They drew the district lines in a way that weakened the voting power of Black communities.
So white people could stay in control.
And what's wild is how they've refined this tactic over the years with
Oh,
technology.
yeah, like with all the data and stuff.
Like Operation Ready Map.
Right, I've heard of that.
This was a huge effort by Republicans in 2010
After the census.
to basically control how districts were drawn.
So they could get an advantage in elections.
Exactly. It was super
And
effective.
it's disheartening to see that these tactics are still being used today.
I agree. And what worries me even more is the role that the courts are playing in all of this.
Oh, yeah, how so?
Raja talks about a few Supreme Court decisions that have basically limited the federal government's ability to oversee elections.
Like which ones?
Cases like Rucho v. Common Cause and Shelby County v. Holder.
Yeah, I remember those.
These decisions made it way harder to challenge gerrymandering and open the door for even more restrictive voting laws.
Which brings us back to that accountability sabotage.
Right, these decisions haven't protected voting rights.
If anything, they've made it easier for those in power to manipulate the system.
It feels like we're watching democracy fall apart in slow motion.
It's pretty alarming.
And the consequences are huge.
Yeah, Raja paints a pretty bleak picture.
Of like what this broken system is doing to people and to society.
So it's not just about some abstract idea of democracy.
Right, it's about real people being hurt.
People losing their right to vote, feeling disillusioned, and just giving up on the whole system. system.
And then you've got this toxic polarization that's tearing us apart.
Exactly, when politicians can gerrymander themselves into safe seats.
They don't have to compromise.
They just appeal to the most extreme parts of their base.
Which just makes the division worse.
It's a vicious cycle.
And it's not just happening in America.
Yeah, this breakdown of democracy is a global trend.
Raja makes the point that America's failures are setting a dangerous example for other democracies.
Like, if it can happen here, it can happen anywhere.
Exactly. And that's a scary thought.
Definitely.
Because if things are this bad in America, a country with so much power and influence...
What hope is there for other countries that are facing even bigger challenges?
It's a scary thought.
Yeah.
But Raja doesn't just leave us, you know, with all this doom and gloom.
Right.
They actually talk about some ways that other countries are trying to fix their democracies.
Oh, yeah.
And it gives me some hope, to be honest.
I mean, some of these ideas are pretty interesting.
Yeah, like they're addressing the same problems we've been talking about.
Uh-huh.
The things that make it so easy for people to manipulate the system and get away with it.
Right.
So, for example, proportional representation.
Yeah.
Which is used in places like Germany and the Netherlands.
So how does that work again? I always get a little confused.
Okay, so basically, instead of just the person with the most votes winning.
Right, like winner takes all.
Even if it's super close.
Yeah.
In proportional representation,
yeah.
They give out seats in the legislature based on how many votes each party gets.
So, like, if a party gets 20% of the votes, they get 20% of the seats.
Exactly. Even if they don't win any particular district, they still get representation.
I mean, that seems way more fair
right.
than what we have.
It's, like, actually reflecting what the people want.
Totally. And it forces parties to work together more.
Oh, yeah. Because they can't just dominate and ignore everyone else.
Right. They have to build coalitions and make compromises.
Imagine if that happened in Congress.
Wow.
Like if you had all these smaller parties with different focuses like climate change or healthcare, and they actually had power to get things done.
It would shake things up for sure.
Yeah, it would be a whole new ballgame.
So what else is out there? Are there any reforms that are like more about how people vote?
Well, there's ranked choice voting, which some places in the U.S. are already using.
Oh, yeah, like Maine and Alaska.
And Australia, too.
Right.
So instead of just picking one candidate, you rank them from your favorite to your least favorite.
Okay.
And if no one gets a majority of first place votes,
right,
they eliminate the person with the least votes, and then they redistribute those votes to the voters' second choices.
So it keeps going until someone has a majority.
Yeah, so the winner actually has support from most of the voters.
Hmm. But does it actually stop people from feeling like they have to vote for the lesser of two evils?
That's the idea, because you can rank your preferences so your vote isn't wasted if your top choice doesn't win.
That makes sense.
And it also encourages candidates to appeal to more people.
Not just their base.
Because they know those second and third choice votes could be the difference.
So they can't just be super negative and attack their opponents.
Right. They actually have to talk about what they would do if they got elected.
Focus on the issues.
So we've got proportional representation to get rid of the two-party system.
Yeah.
And ranked choice voting to give voters more power.
And make campaigns more about substance.
But what about gerrymandering? Mm-hmm. How do we fix those messed up district boundaries?
Well, some countries like New Zealand and Canada have these things called independent redistricting commissions.
Okay.
They're basically groups of experts and regular citizens.
Who don't belong to any party.
Right. They're supposed to be neutral.
And they're the ones who draw the district lines.
So it's not politicians who benefit from the current system.
I mean, that just makes so much sense.
Yeah, why haven't we done that here?
It's a good question, I guess. Because both parties like being able to rig the maps in their favor.
It would take a lot of political will to change that.
Yeah, to put fairness ahead of winning.
But Raja says it's crucial if we want people to trust our democracy again.
I totally agree with that. Okay, so I'm liking these reforms so far.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the people who don't even vote?
Yeah, even if the system is more fair.
It doesn't matter if people don't participate.
That's a tough one.
Raja brings up mandatory voting.
Oh, wow.
Like they have in Australia.
Where it's the law to vote.
Yeah, and you get fined if you don't.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's definitely controversial.
It would definitely get more people to vote.
And make the results more representative.
But it also feels kind of wrong to force people.
Right. Like, what if they just don't care or they don't know anything about the issues?
They might just vote randomly to avoid the fine.
Or it could make people resent the whole system.
It's a tough call, for sure. There are good arguments on both sides.
Okay, so one last thing we have to talk about.
What's that?
Money in politics.
Oh, yeah, the big one.
How do we get rid of the influence of all these rich donors and special interests?
Raja talks about how Norway does it.
Okay.
They use public campaign financing.
So, like, the government pays for the campaigns.
Yeah, mostly. And there are strict limits on how much private individuals can donate.
So candidates don't have to spend all their time fundraising.
Right. They can actually focus on talking to voters and discussing the issues.
That sounds amazing. But would that even work in the U.S.?
I mean, it would be a huge shift.
Raja also mentioned something called the Democracy Dividend Fund.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea.
What is that? Exactly.
It's basically a public fund that would give equal resources to all candidates.
No matter how much money they have or who they know.
Exactly. It's supposed to level the playing field so anyone can run for office.
Even if they're not connected to wealthy donors.
Right. It's about giving more people a chance to participate in democracy.
Sounds pretty radical.
It would definitely be a big change, but remember what we said about accountability sabotage?
Yeah.
Transparency is key to fighting against those sneaky ways that authoritarianism can creep into a democracy.
And public financing would make it much harder for special interests to influence things behind the scenes.
Exactly. Everything would be out in the open.
So these are just a few examples of how other countries are trying to fix their democracies.
There are lots of good ideas out there.
The question is, can any of them actually work in the U.S.?
I mean, we have such a deeply entrenched political system.
Yeah, and so many powerful people benefiting from the way things are.
It's not going to be easy to change that.
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, after all this research, I have to admit, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed.
I get it.
Like, it seems like such a huge problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if we can really fix it.
Well, we've covered a lot,
mm-hmm.
from the history of manipulation to the crazy tactics that are being used now.
Right.
And seeing how other countries are struggling, too. It just shows you this isn't just an American thing. This is a threat to democracy everywhere.
Raja calls it a moral imperative to rebuild our democracy.
Mm.
Like they say, a system based on exploitation and inequality can't survive.
And they're right.
Yeah.
This isn't just some theoretical debate.
Right.
This is about real people's lives.
Right.
The erosion of trust, the rise of extremism, the possibility of violence, these are real dangers.
So it's not just about saving democracy for the sake of democracy.
No, it's about saving ourselves.
Our communities, our future.
Exactly.
But how do we even start?
Well, Raja doesn't just point out the problems.
Yeah.
They offer some solutions.
Uh-huh.
They say we need to stop trying to just save democracy.
Right.
And start building something new.
Something being better.
Something more just and equitable.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's not about clinging to the past.
Uh-huh.
It's about creating a future we can be proud of.
Exactly.
So what can we actually do?
Well, we've talked about some good reforms.
Yeah.
Public financing, independent redistricting commissions, ranked choice voting.
But those are all big changes.
They are.
And it's going to be tough to make them happen.
But Raja reminds us that power never gives up anything without a fight.
Right. They quote Frederick Douglass,
yeah.
who said, "It never did, and it never will."
Exactly. We have to demand change.
So what can we do as individuals? Like, what does that look like in practice?
First, we have to educate ourselves
okay.
about the issues and the solutions.
Right.
We have to
right.
understand how the system works,
yeah.
where the problems are,
mm-hmm.
and what people are proposing to fix it.
Okay, so we have to get informed.
Right. And then we have to get involved.
What do you mean by get involved?
There are lots of things you can do.
Like what?
You can contact your elected officials.
Oh, okay.
And tell them to support specific reforms.
Yeah.
You can volunteer for organizations that are working on these issues, like groups that are fighting for electoral reform
right.
or helping people register to vote.
Okay.
You can donate to candidates who support these changes.
Yeah.
You could even run for office yourself.
Wow.
It's not just about voting every few years.
Right.
It's about being an active citizen.
Participating in the process.
Making your voice heard.
And that's where Raja's message really hits home. It's a call to action, a reminder that we're not powerless.
We can shape our own future.
We can reclaim the promise of democracy.
And create a society that's fair and just for everyone.
So for everyone listening, I want to leave you with this challenge. What can you do to make a difference?
How can you help build a better future?
Don't just sit there and complain about how messed up things are.
Get informed, get involved, get active.
Because at the end of the day, the future of our democracy is in our hands.
It's up to all of us.
That's a great place to end it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been a tough conversation, but I'm actually feeling hopeful now.
Me too.
And remember, the fight for democracy never ends. It's something we have to keep working at every single day.